Well, it's cliche to say the world is changing very quickly. I mean, we all know that. How it's changing and how that's going to affect you and your business, well, that's the question. Particularly through media, when it comes to reaching a wider audience, more potential clients and customers, or simply establishing greater credibility, how can we use media to do that? Media has changed, that's for sure. But how, and what do we do now? And that's really the subject of today's interview. Hi, I'm Joanne McCall, and my guest today is someone who can shed a lot of light on this question. Frank Muncham is Director of Digital Media for KGW Media Group in Portland, a position he's held since 2006. And since then, KGW.com has won the AP Award for Best TV Website in Oregon for 5 consecutive years. And most recently, KGW.com won the AP Mark Twain Award for Best TV News Website in the 12 Western United States. KGW.com has also been honored with a Regional Emmy Award for Interactivity and the Oregon Association of Broadcasters Award for Best TV Website. Previously, Muncham was new media director for Fisher Broadcasting's Portland TV affiliate. Now, before making the move to digital media, Muncham was a TV producer and executive producer for 18 years at network affiliates in Seattle and Portland. He is a Boston native. He graduated with honors from Harvard with a degree in psychology and social relations. Interesting you're in TV, Frank. He also has a master's degree in communication and leadership studies. And the way we actually met, he authored a book, a couple of books now, but he first authored A Guy's Guide to Pregnancy, a Simon & Schuster book, which was reissued last year as an ebook. And his second book, Dream It, Do It, published last year, profiles high achievers and the steps they follow that others can use to achieve their own dreams, which is actually perfect for today's discussion because people on this call are wanting to dream it and do it. Frank, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Joanne. Great to be on.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So let's just jump right into it. I mean, media has changed. You've worked all sides of this, starting as an executive producer, doing local TV and programming, and then moving to the digital. So in a nutshell, let's just start with the big question first, and how have things changed? How has media changed over the past several years from your perspective?
Well, I make my friends laugh by telling them my job has changed probably by two-thirds in 3 years, just in the way that I spend my day, even with my title staying the same. So honestly, I'm shocked at how much things have changed. I would say in a nutshell, it's the audience who's now in charge, and that's the big change. And what I mean by that is that when you were doing the great job marketing my first book, really, media controlled the conversation, and a public relations person would pitch and try to get media attention, and that was how you got to the public. So as an individual, a small business, an author, someone with a product or service, I mean, you had the gatekeeper was the mainstream media. And really, without that access, it was very hard to reach the public. And really, I'd say as I sit here in a legacy media company, our candy's been stolen by a social media, and the audience is just as capable of assigning value directly these days as we are. And oftentimes, and I'm sure we'll talk about this today, oftentimes what we wind up giving media coverage to is in response to social media success and things that bubble up through non-traditional, non-legacy digital channels. So really, the shift to me is a shift in power from media control of the message to the audience really being an equal partner in assigning value, what's interesting to them, whether or not the mainstream media quote-unquote bless a story or a speaker or an author or a business.
Now, is that true if it's a breaking news story? Because a lot of times you hear stories about how big news stories break through Twitter, for example, because there's people right on the scene and they can get it out right away. And so legacy media would respond to that, of course, if it was a big story. Is it also true that does it have to be a news breaking story? Can you also create a lot of buzz about something through your own networks and through social media that legacy media would also be interested in?
Absolutely. I think, actually, you know, oddly enough, breaking news is still where you see the legacy media does have the most trusted brands. And so the distinction between the example you just gave and, say, breaking news is that on breaking news, you might discover, you might first hear about breaking news from some of these new social channels. You might pick it on Twitter. A lot of people bump into news on their Facebook feed, and that's their point of discovery. And so that's different that they discover big breaking news on social or non-traditional channels. But in reality, in the arena of breaking news, most people still wind up going to a traditional screen, a news website, a broadcast network, even a newspaper, because they do respect the authority and history of those brands. It's actually the example that you gave where I see the biggest opportunity for something that isn't life-threatening, game-changing, more the feature, lifestyle, news you can use. Those things much more often today bubble up through non-traditional channels, getting featured on BuzzFeed or in Huffington Post, trending on Twitter, a YouTube video that takes off, and again, to your point, those are things that an individual, a small business, a company, an author can frankly leverage and create those social media events that then become worthy of mainstream media coverage.
Okay, so it comes down to the first thing people would want to do, of course, is build out their platforms so that they can be seen and build their networks and that sort of thing, and then create something to happen, show something. So then what happens? Let's say we have a lot of people on this call who they have businesses and they definitely have networks, and their networks respond to them. So how would they go about making the jump? Would they contact you directly? How would that work for them?
Yeah, and if I can back up one step, I think even when it comes to networks, it might be that everyone on this call today really has the right portfolio, so to speak. But I do think it's worth, in my other life, I teach a social media class at Washington State University, and we actually spend a lot of time, you know, sort of start with the end in mind, talking about platform-specific content matches. And I'm, you know, really at the end of the day, what I have been doing that hasn't changed for 30 years is content. And the content has been distributed on changing platforms as I moved from TV to web to digital and social and mobile. But it's still all about great content. And that is actually, you know, the challenge for anyone today who's got a network. It's really about engaging content. And so I would insert the question, are you have networks, but do you have the right networks for your product, service, or skill? And so, you know, there's definitely an optimization opportunity in terms of, is Twitter right for you? Is LinkedIn, Facebook? Do you have a highly visual business where Pinterest and Instagram should be your focus and strategy? Do you have a video-driven message where YouTube is perhaps your most powerful platform? Vine, which, you know, micro videos can be really effective if you have short form video. So I do think there's almost kind of a network audit step that people really should pause and engage in to make sure that they're not just busy but also productive in terms of their platforms and networks, because frankly, there's not enough time in the day. And when I do social media trainings, I hear this all the time. You know, how do we, small businesses and clients, KGW clients, I do training for our clients, and they say, how do we make time to manage all these new things? The answer is, well, there isn't time to manage all of them. So at the beginning, you want to be sure that if you are a generator of regular information, that you're on Twitter, if you have highly social content that people are want to comment on and share, that says Facebook all over it. If it's highly visual, Instagram and Pinterest. If it's very professional, if there's a lot of overlap with job seeking, job hunting, advancing professionally, LinkedIn is a great match. So I just wanted to insert that, because I often see people being very busy on their networks but not effective because they're not in the right spaces.
I teach social media over at Merrillhurst University, and with my clients too. That's often what I hear. I don't want to read about people, what they're having for lunch, and
I don't care about the bagel.
Yeah, so your point is well taken. It really is important to know that, and I think you spelled that out really clearly, that LinkedIn is more your professional platform, Facebook is more social and interactive, and Twitter is when you have a lot of news. So that's good. So you're using all those platforms personally and professionally?
Professionally, so you will appreciate the humor. As the saying goes, the cobbler's children have no shoes. I spend every waking hour using Facebook and Twitter to drive our company brand at KGW. And in between sleeping and so on, I do enjoy Facebook and Twitter. Personally, Twitter's probably the one that I use for my own professional staying up to date as a digital thought leader and a social thought leader. I am, like so many other people, challenged to be regular and consistent about, say, my digital blog that I have. I mean, I can go a month without updating it. So yes, the cobbler's children have no shoes. But by day, under the rubric of KGW News, I am out there everywhere. We have 70,000 fans on our KGW Facebook page. We have 30,000 Twitter followers. So we are extremely active on the largest platforms that align with our business goals. And again, that's kind of the point I want to emphasize is you can't be on all these spaces and do them well in the unique flavors that each one has. So it's really valuable to pick two or three that best align with your business goals and do those well. And then by definition, you're not distracted by the latest shiny object of all, and Vine, actually, I mentioned it almost on purpose. Vine is a great example to me of one that we, as a news organization, have decided is a shiny object, and we're not going to waste our time. Okay. Now, if I were a comedian, if I were a stand-up comic, Vine is a fantastic, very short-form method of being funny and getting yourself out there and getting noticed. So it's all about, taking the time to really think about what is your value proposition as a small business, who are you trying to reach, what problem are you trying to solve, and then which of these platforms really aligns, and concentrate your efforts where you're going to get the most return. Because in this day and age, there's 10 new social tools come out every month, and you could really dilute your efforts without achieving much in the way of results.
Mm-hmm. We have a number of people listening that they've grown their thought leaders themselves. They've grown their businesses, and they've got email lists. They're doing a lot of marketing. They're doing a lot of social media. They have built a network that responds to them, and they want to make the jump to securing larger media. And so they've got networks, but they want to grow it. I mean, many of them crave. They've got a message. They want to get it out in the world, and they need bigger platforms. So, I want to talk to you about how can they go about doing that.
You bet.
So
this is the question you asked. So once you're set up with the appropriate social platforms,
mm-hmm.
here is my advice, which you'll probably laugh at because I know you've been evolving with this business as well over time, is the new pitch is look how socially shared my content is. So I'll tell you how we work as a broadcaster that is very active in digital, and we're number one in our market on TV for reach. So, we're a leader in our market, and we still get pitches every day. But here's how our editorial decision-making process has changed. We respond now a very influential variable in whether or not we would cover something that's not breaking spot news is twofold. What is the social reach of the person or business who is pitching, and what is the social sharing opportunity if we cover this story? And let me break that down. So if you're someone who is a thought leader, an influencer, has a business, and you've grown a following, part of the pitch today, in this day and age, should be, I have X thousand followers on LinkedIn. Here is something I put out in social media that generated a large amount of buzz. Literally, I would include a screen grab of if someone authored a blog post that was widely shared on LinkedIn or Facebook, and those metrics are displayed right on those platforms. That then is a reason for us to listen, in the same way that it used to be a reason for us to listen. And I know I've received those pitch letters from you, Joanne, where like this expert was featured on insert legacy media platform here, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Today, the pitch letter that is persuasive is this thought leader generates content that has reached this many people on insert social platform here. So the social reach of an expert or a piece of content is evidence of public interest. Again, the role change that we now work for the audience instead of we tell the audience what the news is that we are hungry to find things that have proven audience appeal and direct audience appeal, like social evidence, as opposed to what we've always had to rely on in the past, which is indirect audience appeal measurement via Nielsen's, which, frankly, as viewership gets fractured, the smaller the number, the less reliable the number is, just from a stats standpoint. So Nielsen's have always been a bad metric, and true social engagement today is a very influential part of the conversation we have about deciding what stories to cover. So that's the first half. The second half is we're much more interested in doing a story, I'd say, in a self-interested way, if we see a social viral benefit for ourselves, the long tail of that story we cover. Because here's the reality. If we cover a story in our 5 o'clock news, our flagship newscast, that story and that newscast gets, say, a 3 rating. That's 30,000 households in the Nielsen universe. And that story airs, and then from a television standpoint, it's gone. Like champagne bubbles. It's great while you're there, but it doesn't last long. The long tail of that story, when we publish it on our website, when we share it on our Facebook page in front of 70,000 fans, when we tweet out the link to the story that we did, the long tail traffic that we get on our digital platforms, on our mobile app, on our website, through the sharing of the story that we trigger on Facebook, we make a business. In this day and age, almost 20% of our revenue now comes from digital, and every year that ratio jumps again. And so we want to do stories that will have a long tail life on digital and that will have a social and viral life in these social platforms where, frankly, a lot of the news discovery happens today. Mm-hmm. So it is extremely important, actually, to tell and sell the social appeal of someone's message in this day and age. And it's very influential in our editorial process. And I can tell you that that's a dramatic change in just 3 years, the conversations that we have in the daily morning editorial meeting. And these are meetings that happen in every newsroom of every legacy operation in the country, I guarantee you. And the difference in how those conversations go today compared to a couple of years ago, it's quite dramatic.
That's really fascinating. When it comes to the content, Frank, let's say someone has a great network. They've shared something and it's been reshared with a lot of people. There's a lot of social appeal. There's a lot of interactivity going on. But let's say that their market is more of a niche or a segment of the population. Would you be as interested? So, for example, let's say someone has a huge network and it's going out to people who are entrepreneurs and building their business that would be an example, how they went about doing that, and it's got a lot of interaction. Now, is that something you'd be interested in, or does it need to be more mainstream?
That's a great question, and I think, you know, if we have this conversation again in a year, I might have to change my answer just as I see the path of evolution for local TV. So I'll give you the today answer is this is a good fork in the road for something else I think we wanted to talk about, which is when do you pitch digital differently than legacy media? And so today I would say that legacy broadcast specifically is probably still thinking broadcast. And so one of the filters is still, does it have wide appeal? So it would be harder to get a specialty topic like that pitched successfully onto legacy broadcast because there is still that effort to try. You have 22 minutes of programming in your newscast, and you somehow have to try to make every one of those 22 minutes of content be universally appealing. So until we get more niche casts on local broadcasters at the local level, it's going to be hard to successfully pitch those niche stories. So pause button, because as local broadcast ratings get smaller and the audiences actually become niche, it becomes more important just to get things that have stories that have a following of any kind, and you can use networks to drive sampling for a specific story. So in other words, the authors' networks or the expert, the networks that they have can market, hey, I'm going to be seen on KGW News at 5. And that then becomes good enough when you're in a world of a 1 to a 2 rating for the local newscast. That may. So in a year or two, I think we might have a different answer to the niche versus broad question for broadcast. But in your example today, I would say that's when you actually focus on a digital pitch, because every day of the week we have now, and this is what you're seeing in newsrooms around the country, we have a separate additive digital editorial meeting. And let me take a moment to explain how that works, because it's really important to understand the difference between the traditional TV broadcast editorial process and the new digital editorial process. TV isn't interested, three filters that exist for TV do not exist for digital. TV has a geography problem. If you are too far away, that's trucks and resources and cameras that have to drive X hours. And so the further you are away from the mothership, the worse a TV story it is for purely logistical reasons. TV has a resource problem. There are 6 crews. When they're gone, they're gone. And several of them every day are siphoned off by breaking news. TV has a visual problem, which is if it isn't moving video that's compelling, it's not, quote-unquote, good TV. If you think about it, none of those limitations are relevant in a digital world. Mm. You can be at the Oregon coast. You can be on the East Coast, and if it's a local story that we're interested here at our Portland station, we can pick up a phone, do an interview, and we're done. That also is the on-camera problem, right? We don't need someone on camera. We don't need it to be fascinating, moving video. If it's an important story, if it's an interesting story, we can have one visual, even a graphic, to represent the story, and that meets our quote-unquote visual needs. And we don't have a when they're gone, physical resource problem of we only have 6 cameras per day. So, and the last thing that bears on your point is we don't actually have a broadcast problem either. We have a fully built-out business section. We have a technology section. We have a lifestyle section. We have a food. We have all these niches, and from the beginning, that's been the power of the web, right? All you need is 10 people who are really interested in foosball to have a foosball blog that is globally popular. So we can super serve special interest needs. And so I think it's really important for folks to understand that there's an emerging digital editorial process that has different criteria and is not restricted in the way we've traditionally understood the problems of trying to pitch, say, a TV outlet for coverage. So there are really opportunities to get digital direct coverage that are not laundered through, and this is true for newspapers as well, that are not laundered through the sort of legacy pitch process.
Okay, so I just want to clarify one point. When you refer to a legacy news organization, whether it's a newspaper, television station, are you referring to a part of your company, for example, because you also have the digital side? You wouldn't call that legacy, or would you? I don't quite understand. I know what legacy means.
It's sure, sure. No, it's these are changing times with moving parts, and sometimes the terms get thrown around. So it's a great question. So, you know, KGW is an example. You know, is a legacy media company because we are still primarily a broadcast TV station that has a digital division, if you will. We have a news website, we have mobile apps, we have social platforms, and we still broadcast 7.5 hours of television news a day. So within our operation, as with many, many legacy TV news operations around the country, and if they're not all there, they will be, you know, in the next couple of years if they're going to survive, we have a TV morning editorial process that determines the resources and allocation for what will be in the TV newscast. We certainly coordinate between digital and TV in terms of having those reporters write up, and we publish their TV stories. They also write for web, and we publish those, and we add the video. So all of that happens seamlessly cross-platform. But in addition to what the TV crews are assigned to, we have a separate digital-only content team. And that content team meets daily, makes a different parallel set of editorial decisions based on the truly unique nature of our digital platforms, which are not encumbered by some of those long-standing, you know, obstacles of production that the TV crews struggle with. We are not bound by geography. We're not bound by, you know, the visual requirements and the video requirements of TV. We don't need somebody to be, quote-unquote, on camera to have something be a publishable story. And we don't need to meet that very difficult standard of every story in the 5 o'clock news must appeal to the entire audience. Mm-hmm. We have all kinds of cubbyholes and followers of those niche. You know, we just launched a page just for one of our smaller college teams in the area, and that is a very targeted audience. But those people are passionate, right? We have a page for our minor league hockey team in town. I mean, that's a niche audience, and I can assure you, a passionate audience. So that's very difficult for a broadcaster to justify doing a story that 90% of people aren't interested in. For us, doing 10 stories, each of which are highly interesting to 10% of our audience, gets us 100% of the audience. And that's the digital magic. So I hope that helps clarify it. I think there's a huge opportunity to begin to think about digital-specific pitching of the kinds of stories that maybe were hard to get done in the legacy broadcast model.
Right. Well, you teed up the next question really well, but before I ask it, I want to... So is the legacy like a morning television show when it's in someone's own market, is that still relevant? I mean, there's still some audience at this point in time. Yes.
Absolutely. And here's the irony to me. For all, it is sort of like, movie theaters are doomed because of VHS tapes, right? And now here we look back on that and giggle. I mean, movies are doing just fine. Thank you very much. Every one of these mediums whose death has been predicted endures, but changes. And so the power of broadcast, for example, to me, is still in that big pulpit reach. The secondary power now, which, you know, hopefully I'm getting that value across, is that when the broadcast footprint happens, so on a morning show, there's content featured, the secondary life that content now has through that station's publication of the same story on their website by sharing that same story on their high-reach social platforms. I mean, generally speaking, you see the highest reach of all within social platforms is by legacy media outlets. Mm-hmm. We all have huge reach because we have newspaper or broadcast reach to tell people about our social platforms. We own, you know, the megaphone to promote our social footprint. And so the morning show has value because it's sort of the gatekeeper. Getting on there gets you all the other stuff, gets you the website story on the trusted local brand, you know, NBC affiliate, what have you, gets you the social post in front of 70, 100,000 fans or followers. Those things have great value. And the gateway to that is that traditional coverage. So I certainly wouldn't steer people away from that so much as just know that for people who have been thwarted in trying to get that coverage, there are some new opportunities.
Okay, good. All right. Well, some I know that some of the people here are doing pretty well within, digital media, and they wanna step into the more like the Today Show, for example, or some of the really big legacy media programs and operations. And so it's like a 1-2 punch, isn't it? I mean, you can get on some of these big programs, and then there's that long tail that you referred to as things are shared socially. Okay, so Frank, how you mentioned that there's a digital department. So let's say I have a good friend who wrote a book on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That's a very niche book, right? Very niche. So, but she's found a great audience. So if someone, not necessarily a book like that, but if they have a business or they have a lifestyle story or whatever, so they pitch a whole different department. The digital department is a whole different department, correct?
You know, we're in a transition period in legacy media, so everybody's organized a little differently. But generally speaking, there is a group either within or parallel to the traditional news room that all they do is digital. In the Portland market, for example, you know, the newspaper has a digital specific team that all they do is only digital content, and that's inside of the larger newspaper where folks do traditional reporting for the paper and then do a version for the web. And our TV newsroom at KGW is exactly the same way. We have a group, I've got a staff of 6 who do nothing but direct to digital and direct to social. Now, how we're organized, so this is the good news, is, and I think it's the logical organization, there's still a single entry point to most newsrooms. The news assignment desk that people are used to pitching, generally, what we're doing certainly is our filter folks who receive the incoming pitches now sort them differently. We put together a day book, as we call it, for every day for the TV news morning editorial meeting, and that day book might contain 60 things that are pitched for that day. But our news assignment desk now filters that list, and there are things that wind up going in the digital bin as, well, we know this doesn't meet our traditional TV requirements, the things you and I have just talked about. Mm-hmm. But they might be interesting as digital direct plays. And so we actually are engaged in the sorting ourselves, recognizing that it's in our business interest to not, you know, there's been a set of stories that historically, I would say, legacy media have dismissed because it didn't meet the criteria we've talked about. Mm-hmm. In a digital world, that's a missed opportunity for us, too. And so I will say, you know, in terms of making this actionable, we're in a period of transition where it can be a little challenging, Joanne, to know exactly, there's not a single answer to how do you get in front of the digital team, because different organizations are handling this transition differently. Some literally have a separate parallel operating unit where digital reports all the way up the corporate chain of command to some far-off land, and there's actually not very good integration between the legacy and the digital news departments. Here in our market at the newspaper, that was true for a really long period of time, and quite literally that changed only 6 months ago. But before then, you would literally double pitch if you wanted to get separate consideration by the digital team. So we're in a period of flux where it's going to be a different answer depending upon which legacy outlet you're pitching. Where it will need to go is there'll be a point of entry and we will have learned on our end how to properly sort pitches by platform relevance. But in this intermediary period, I think it's actually worth posing the question on the front end, do you have a digital-only editorial team that I can also pitch this to? And that's really what it takes, is on the front end taking the initiative to clarify the internal editorial process, because I'd say it's 50-50 right now, whether it's an integrated newsroom or actually a siloed newsroom, as legacy outlets try to figure this out.
That's so interesting, because, Frank, I hear you saying things that I say all the time, you know, like, now the answer I'm giving you right now is probably going to be different in 6 months. It does. It's constantly changing. That's why calls like this are so important, just to see where we are today, what's going on right now. So there used to be a day when you could actually call, like, the front desk of an organization and find out some of these questions without necessarily going right into the newsroom. But that's not always the case anymore, too, with these very highly technical voicemail systems that you can get lost in for quite some time, by the way.
Indeed.
You've had that experience. Everyone here has. So let's get into the real specifics. So pitching, would that be on the phone, or do you find someone email? Or?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. Yeah. Now, again, this just, as you've noted, I slap the asterisk on. I'll give you the truth according to Frank, and two things about that is I could bring a friend in who would say I'm full of it, and then I could give you a different answer next year. So with those two disclaimers, landlines are dead. I mean, my phone as an all digital dude, I am always connected to email. I mean, shamefully so. Midnight, weekends, I can't get away. I'm often not at my desk. The old method of me seeing that it's Joanne calling in and taking the call back at AM Northwest when I was doing the morning talk show, right? That is a rare experience for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The beauty of email pitches is, as we like to say in fancy social media academia, it's asynchronous. It's not real time. It doesn't interrupt what I'm doing. I can attend to it when I can, and increasingly that might be at all kinds of odd hours, like late in the evening when I'm finally able to catch up. It also makes it very easy to port the content to the right place. So I get stuff all the time that isn't right for me. I move it over to our TV business reporter. I mean, I feel like I am the best booker of our local business news reporter's time, because I know what he'll cover and what he won't. I don't send him, just like I've always appreciated, you would not pitch me authors, for example, that weren't right for AM Northwest. Don't miss pitch, and then when you do pitch, people will take it seriously. So that's obviously thing one. Don't just spam when you pitch, target the audience. So I refer stuff all the time away from digital to him that I know these will make good local video business stories. But so I would say email is best, because it's the most reassignable per my whole, every newsroom right now is organized a little differently. So it's really important that it be easy to move the entirety of the pitch to the right person in the most comprehensive way. You don't want to lose stuff. So the phone conversations actually wind up, too much gets lost in translation. That would be my first piece of advice. The other thing I wanted to say is some of the old tricks, just new platforms, but they still work great. We used to say, hey, if you like in your market, you really like a reporter, you think they do a good job, you notice that they tend to do the kinds of stories that are interesting to you, reaching out to that TV reporter directly, referencing some story they did, what you liked about it and why, is a great way to relationship build, and then you pitch them something you think they might be interested in that you do. If it's a good story, they're going to appreciate that you are an attentive viewer, and so the digital opportunity is the same. On our digital team, everybody's assigned to byline their stories. So there is a direct point of entry there, just like in the legacy days, where take a look at the websites of the of the big footprint news sources in your market or out of market, you know, even at the national level, who has the bylines that are doing the stories that you are interested in that are similar to your area of expertise, and you are able to basically get the playbook in terms of who to contact right off of the website based on the bylines of who's publishing. All my team have both their email and their Twitter handle displayed in an automated way on the stories that the enterprise stories that they report. And then, frankly, you can click through, see that person's Twitter feed, and see the other kinds of things that they are talking about, and you can multi-platform pitch them. You can send a tweet saying, hey, check your email, just sent you something that might be like that story you did last Friday on blah, blah, right? And then you do the email pitch on the side. And I think that's an old technique that worked great in the old days, applied to new platforms.
Yes. And I'm glad you said that because some don't even want to use email anymore, that they want to hear things via Twitter. So it always comes down to, I think, that different people like to receive information in different ways. There's generalizations, but then also, you know, people are individuals. It's that whole customization thing. Funny, huh?
Right. And, yeah, so thank you. I do want to emphasize, I think it's hazardous to only use one method. So I'm somebody who, if you pitch me on Twitter, I could miss it. But you're absolutely right. I have peers, social media peers, that do what I do at other stations and so on. And they're on Twitter all day long. And then I have other peers, professional peers, who we're in shared Facebook professional groups together, and they're in the Facebook group all day long. And I'm the one who, you know, email is the single 24/7 easy one for me. So, I mean, if you're trying to get all three of us, for example, there's three different strategies. So I don't know too many people who would be upset at someone for, you know, using a multi-platform reach approach. I do know that you could really miss people individually if you only used one platform. So I think it's important to use all of those rather than say, well, I heard on one call that email is the way, therefore that's all I'm ever going to use.
All right, good point. That's a really good point. So, Frank, we're talking about people having networks and a big reach. Does that mean, let's say someone has a lot of social sharing and it's an interesting story and that sort of thing, do credentials still play into this? It used to be to get certain things, you had to have the master's or the PhD or you had to be training people in a certain thing. I mean, how important are credentials now?
Well, that's a great question. I'll give you an opinion. I'm not sure I can claim to be an expert on that, but what I observe is the audience now decides what credentials matter.
Oh.
So it's, again, back to this power shift where, you know, we might decide, and we, as a legacy news operation, we've actually even received this as feedback, where the audience is less impressed by someone's credentials and more they want to hear from people who are in the public discourse on a topic. So someone who's considered a thought leader, i.e., through social sharing has been identified as a thought leader on the topic, doesn't need to have the PhD. They might not be a very good communicator, actually. The person who maybe is the thought leader has been vetted through social media, which is you and I assigning value to their blog post or their video or their speech or their content. So, you know, as someone who took a lot of time and effort to go get a master's degree, I think, you know, there is some value to professional expertise, and in some ways we live in a dumbed down world where we sort of discredit experts and expertise potentially at our own peril. But I do believe that one of the many incremental shifts we're seeing is that expertise increasingly is being assigned through a social process more than conferred via titles and degrees. And as a media operation, we are looking at socially assigned credibility and expertise, not just titles and so on.
Mm-hmm. So, Frank, where do you see things going? Let me ask you something before that. You work for a big organization, and you're on the digital piece of it, and over the years, I can't even imagine what it must have been like for you to share your vision with some of these people. Do you want to talk about that? How has that been?
You mean the digital shift for legacy people?
Yeah.
Well, especially, it's scary. It's scary change, just as you would imagine. I mean, anybody who, you know, when you're the big dog, and I think, you know, the privilege many of us have had of working in legacy media. I worked at a TV station when, you know, we had an enormous audience every night, and TV was by far and away the most powerful medium for reach and for informing people, and it was very exciting to be part of what you knew was the most influential medium out there. And so think about all the people who built a career around that, and I went through this with a number of colleagues who worked at newspapers who, you know, really went through a brutal downsizing and repositioning of their role in society, right? And that was very difficult, and so I have been at various times in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, I think of myself as a change evangelist, still advocating for the values of journalism and the role of local media, but trying to compel adaptation to the changes in the world around us. And, you know, there are two ways to respond to change, right? You know, you hunker down and you resist and you fight it tooth and nail and you don't want to change because you liked the old deal. And absolutely, you know, I've encountered that. But at the same time, you know, I've always looked at it that I have a value proposition to offer, which is a future to go with someone's past in journalism. And for me, frankly, this has been a tremendously exciting time to get to be a professional, to witness the changes that we've gone through and to actually be part of them and get to sort of, in little tiny ways, tweak the path of the ship. I find very, very exciting to learn all these new tools. So if you're committed to informing the public and having news be a conversation that engages people and you want people involved in the process, then really journalism is alive and well, and it's the tools that have changed. So you're only in trouble if you think that journalism equals printed words on a page or journalism has to happen at 6 p.m. on a nationally broadcast screen. If you look at these new tools as different ways to accomplish the same goals, it's very exciting, and I'm happy to say, to answer your question, that most people, when they get over the initial shock that their world is changing, have been very excited by learning the new tools, mm-hmm. and seizing the new opportunities.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It's so true. It is a very exciting time. And media, whether it's legacy media, digital media, the new forms, the new channels of reaching out, it's still very, very powerful. I mean, the information that's most shared, it's not that, let's see, I don't know the percentages now, but it's not that like bloggers and individuals are sharing brand new material. Mostly what's shared is what comes from the legacy and digital media, which, of course, is coming from people who are pitching them too. So it's kind of an interesting circle that's going on. And you know, the idea that the media is dying, it's just changing form. I remember I don't remember this, actually, but I remember hearing this, that when TV came along, they all said radio's dead, right?
Right.
Well, yeah, radio isn't dead.
Exactly.
So before we wrap up, two more things. One, just where do you see things going now, Frank? We're obviously, you know, it continues to change, but what are you seeing at the moment?
Well, you know, I think the big thing that is immediately ahead of us, and if I really knew the answer, of course, Joanne, I'd be doing this call from an island where I was permanently residing, retired.
Absolutely, I'd be with you.
So I'll take the umbrella out of my drink and say that, you know, in the very short term, I have a fair amount of confidence that we're going to see a continuation of this social shift in power, and that increasingly kind of legacy outlets we're no longer the center of the information ecosystem. If we are good listeners and are engaged with our audience, we will remain a really influential part of the conversation. But increasingly, and you know, for your folks on this call today, the huge opportunity, oddly enough, coming from someone who works in legacy media, is leaving us out and going direct to the people. So that ability to develop compelling content and develop your personal networks and your personal reach, in my class, I talk about the brand of you, developing your social persona. The direct-to-audience, bypassing the middleman of legacy media, is remarkable, because more and more what we wind up covering on our news is in reaction to what has already bubbled up in social as opposed to not that long ago, what showed up in social was what we covered. And I see that trend continuing, and for us, the key is to stay relevant by being good listeners to the social conversation. For people looking for exposure, the opportunity is to continue to become better content creators and storytellers and to continue to develop those networks, because we're going to see more and more cases where the success, the reach success, happens directly from creator to audience without the middleman in between.
Mm, wow. Big stuff.
Yeah.
Frank, this is great. I really, it's just been wonderful talking to you today. Let's before I let you go, how is your book Dream It, Do It going? Let's talk about that.
You know, thank you. It's been so fun. You know, my first book, the Guy's Guide to Pregnancy, was really a lark. I mean, how absurd. I'm not a doctor, but I had a fascinating revelation going through that journey, and a lot of other guys were stumbling and bumbling like me. And so it was just one of those moments in time. Books that, yeah, I can't believe all these years, 25,000 copies sold, and now it's out in ebook. But that was always something, you know, more fun than a passion project. You know, from my 20 years of working in broadcasting, I got to meet and interview every kind of successful person you could imagine, and you'd be crazy to have an opportunity like that and not try to glean words of wisdom from them. And what was remarkable to me over the years of meeting all these high achievers is the sort of consistent path that it turned out they had followed. And so I had been doing this topic as a speech for some time, and it was great fun to finally have, when I finished my master's degree, I had time to get it all down into book form. And you know, how encouraging, frankly, to know that the secrets of these folks' success is really not actually a secret, and that the steps that they follow are repeatable and steps that we can all use. So the book is basically, you know, a roadmap using the examples and the stories of these high achievers for how people can go about in a very practical way to map out and reach lofty goals. And so it came out last year, and it's been very fun to get it out there, because it's a passion of mine. You know, I really admire people who don't talk about someday, but make today, you know, the day that they start working on the things that are really core to them and passionate. And so, you know, every person who gets moved by that, and I love getting through my own social channels, you know, feedback of people who have, the book has helped sort of trigger, it was the last straw in a good way, where it was the tipping point that got them to be bold and finally stop talking about it and finally go for it. So every time I get a story back like that, it rejuvenates me and my passion for, you know, anything that book can do to help people get to where they're trying to go. So it's been very fun.
Well, and in this day and age, your audience, your readers can do that. They can reach you through the social channels. It used to be you'd put something like that out and you wouldn't necessarily get any feedback. Maybe someone would write the publisher and you'd eventually get a letter 6 months later, but, you know, that didn't happen all that often. But now you can get direct feedback. So it's Dream It, Do It. And then people can, if they want to connect with you, Twitter, is that a good way? Or
it is, at Frank Words. Frank Words.
Frank Words. FrankWords. Well, Frank, that's it. We're about out of time. Got to let you go. I know you have plenty to do. You've got a huge newsroom to handle over there. So thank you so much for taking time out with us today.
It was a pleasure, Joanne.
Frank Mungem, Director of Digital Media for KGW Media Group, NBC, our Media Insider guest interview today. So that was interview number one in the Big Shift Media series of interviews. I hope you got a lot out of that. I know I did when I talked with him. And, of course, my mission in the world is to help others to understand these kinds of changes. As a publicist and a media trainer, you know, I live in this world. And so I'm always fascinated by what's going on. And it's just truly my pleasure to pass that along to you. And I hope you got a lot out of it. Frank talked about the shift in power to social, building that platform, breaking news and how the traditional media brands are still important, certainly in that capacity, how they play together, the digital, the legacy, the social, all of those different aspects. So we learned a lot today. Also, I want to point out we have two more calls coming up in this particular series. And what I want to let you know is that what Frank shared with us was great and helpful, and others that we'll be talking to have some different points of view. So I think that this is really helpful to get a very big look at what's going on. So today it was focused on television, and then tomorrow we're going to be talking with Anita Prusiz, who is a columnist with Gannett News Service, and her column particularly runs in USA Today. It's picked up by newspapers all around the country, but USA Today regularly. And we're going to have a conversation about what's going on with print now, what's happening in the digital arena with print. So I think that that will be very helpful. The times tomorrow will be shifting, mostly because I know some people are available at this time of day, others later in the day it's better. So I wanted to kind of mix it up. But you will always have access to that replay if for whatever reason you can't make it to a call. You have access to the replay, and very shortly we'll be sending that out to you. So Melanie, are you with me? Melanie is on my team here.
Yes, I am with you. It was
excellent.
Awesome.
Any thoughts about today's conversation?
Well, you know, I really enjoyed the things that he shared, because I do think sometimes we underestimate, you know, that part of the media and what it can do for us still. And, you know, he's very down to earth, and I just really enjoyed, you know, listening to him explain that there are those, you know, multiple platforms for us to, you know, pay attention to and consider.
And, you know, I'll be conducting other interviews as well. So every, you know, probably pretty frequently, I'll talk to different media insiders to get their take on what's going on. And here's something I just want to share with people here today, that I did interview one gentleman who has had a national syndicated show for a long time. And he does have the opinion that media is dying. And I thought that was very, it was amazing to hear this. And what I realized through talking with him is the reason he had that viewpoint was because he hadn't yet found a vision of where things could move forward for him. And so you may, people on this call, you may talk to other people who do feel, yeah, you know, they're in media and it does seem like it's dying, but they haven't latched on to a new viewpoint yet. At least that's what I discovered. So again tomorrow, Anita Prusiz, don't miss that. She's amazing. She's with Gannett News Service in USA Today. And on Thursday, we'll be talking with Tara Rummel Burson, who's written for many large magazines, including Red Book. She was on staff there. She's written for, and she still does, she's editor for a couple of very large media online sites. And so she shares her perspective on what's going on. So all of this is to kind of help us to understand how we can build our own platforms and also engage other media to help build it even more, because that's really what we're going for. So I've got a program called Media Bootcamp that's going to be launching in a few weeks, and I wanted to do these calls to kind of set the tone, and I'll be telling you a little bit more about that later. But for now, I think we're done for now. Melanie, anything you want to add?
I'm just really looking forward to tomorrow, and please be sure to take time to join us. It's going to be worth your time.
And if you know of anybody who you think would benefit from these calls, I hope you'll send that link. Can we get that to them too, Melanie? We'll send that out with the replay on how others can then join us. Yeah, I mean, invite people. I want to get the word out about this. All right, so have a great rest of your day, everybody. See you tomorrow. You'll get the replay soon. Okay, bye-bye.